Chapter 1. Carcassonne, July 1942. Sandrine jolted awake, bolt upright, her eyes wide open, her right hand stretched out as if she was trying to grasp something. For a moment she was neither asleep nor awake, as if some part of her had been left behind in the dream. Floating, looking down at herself from a great height, like the stone gargoyles that grimaced at passers-by from the Cathedrale Saint-Michel. A sensation of slipping out of time, falling from one dimension into another through white, endless space. Then running and running, escaping the figures hunting her down. Indistinct outlines of white and red and black, pale green, their faces hidden beneath hoods and shadow and flame. Always the sharp glint of metal where should have been skin. Sandrine couldn't remember who the soldiers were, or what they wanted, if indeed she'd ever known, and already the dream was fading. Only the sense of threat, of betrayal, remained, and those emotions too were slipping away. Little by little, the room came back into focus. She was safe in her own bed, in the house in the Rue du Palais. As her eyes became accustomed to the dark, she could pick out the bureau of bleached mahogany against the wall between the two windows. To the right of her bed, the high-backed couch covered with washed green Chinese silk and the bamboo plant stand. Opposite, beside the door, the low bookcase, its shelves filled to bursting. Sandrine wrapped her bare arms around her knees, shivering in the chill of the early morning. She reached for her eiderdown, as if by touching something real she would feel less insubstantial, less transparent. But her fingers found only the cotton of her crumpled sheet. The eiderdown, kicked off in the night, lay on the floor beside the bed. She couldn't see the hands on the clock on the chest of drawers, but there was something in the quality of the light coming through the gaps in the shutters, the song of the blackbirds in the street outside, that told her it was nearly morning. She didn't have to get up, but she knew she wouldn't go back to sleep now. Sandrine slipped out of bed and tiptoed across the room in her bare feet, trying to avoid the worst of the creaking floorboards. Her clothes were piled, raggle-taggle, over the arm of the cane-backed chair at the foot of her bed. She wriggled out of her nightdress and dropped it to the floor. Though she was 18, Sandrine still looked like the tomboy she had been, a garçon manqué. She was all arms and legs. There was nothing soft about her. Her black hair refused to be tamed, and she had the deep complexion of a country girl, tanned from days spent out of doors. Powder made no difference. As she threaded her slim arms into the sleeves of her cotton blouse, she noticed a smudge on the inside of the wide round collar where she'd experimented yesterday with her sister's face powder. She rubbed at it with her thumb, but it was stubborn and wouldn't shift. The skirt was too big, a hand-me-down. Their housekeeper, Marietta, had moved the hook and eye, taking in a good 2 inches at the waist, so even though it didn't hang quite right, it was wearable. Sandrine liked the feel of the sateen lining against her legs, the way the checkered pattern shifted through squares of red and black and gold when she walked. In any case, everyone wore hand-me-downs these days. The sleeveless pullover was her own, a blousy burgundy, knitted by Marietta last winter, that half argued with, half suited her colouring. Perching on the edge of the chair, Sandrine pulled on her écossaise, the precious tartan socks her father had brought back as a gift from Scotland. His last trip, as it turned out. François Vidal had been one of the many Carcassonnais who had gone to fight and never come home. After the months of waiting, seeing no action, the drôle de guerre, the phony war as it had become known. He was killed on the 18th of May 1940 in the Ardennes, along with most of his unit. A muddle of orders, an ambush, 10 men dead. It had been 2 years. Although she still missed her father, and her nights were often broken by bad dreams, she and Marianne had learnt to carry on without him. The truth was, much as Sandrine hated to admit it, the outline of his face and his gentle smile, were less clear in her mind with each passing month. In the east, the sun was rising. Light filtered through the patterned glass of the arched window on the stairwell, casting a kaleidoscope of blue and pink and green diamonds onto the rust-red tiles. Sandrine hesitated a moment outside her sister's bedroom. Even though it was her intention to sneak out, she had a sudden urge to check that Marianne was there, safe in her bed. Sandrine put her hand on the ornate metal door handle and crept in. She tiptoed over to the bed. In the grey half-light, she could just make out her sister's head on the pillow, her brown hair wrapped in complicated knots of paper and rollers. Marianne's face was as beautiful as ever, but there was a spider's web of worry lines around her eyes. Sandrine could just make out her shoes beside the bed. She frowned, wondering where she had been for them to be caked in mud. "Marianne," she whispered. Her sister was 5 years older. She taught history at the École des Filles on Square Gambetta, but spent much of her free time at the centre run by the Red Cross in the Rue de Verdun. Quiet and principled, Marianne had offered her services as a volunteer with the Croix Rouge after France's surrender in June 1940, when tens of thousands of dispossessed people from the occupied zone had fled south to the Languedoc. Then, her work had been to provide food, shelter, blankets for refugees fleeing the advancing Nazi forces. Now it was monitoring the condition of prisoners being held in Carcassonne's jail or being sent to internment camps in the mountains.
"Marianne," whispered Sandrine again, "I'm going out. I won't be long."
Her sister murmured and turned over in her bed but did not wake. Considering her duty done, Sandrine stole back out of the room and quietly closed the door. Marianne didn't like her going out in the early morning, even though there was no curfew in the zone non occupée, the zone nono, as it was known. There were regular patrols and the atmosphere was often jittery. But it was only in the stillness of the early morning, free from the restrictions and tensions and compromises of everyday life, that Sandrine felt herself. She didn't intend to give up these moments of freedom unless she had to. Until she had to. Sandrine carried on down through the silently sleeping house, trailing her hand over the warm wood of the banister. Diamonds of coloured light danced at her heels. For an instant, she wondered if other girls, in other times, had felt the same as she did. Confined, caught between childhood and the adult life to come. And in the air around her, the echo of all those stifled hearts, trapped spirits, fluttered and sighed and breathed. So many different lives, passed over centuries in the narrow streets of the medieval cité or in the Bastille Saint-Louis, whispered and cried out to be heard. Sandrine could not understand them, not yet, though a certain restlessness moved in her blood, her veins. For the ancient spirit of the Midi, buried in the deep memory of the mountains and hills, in the lakes and the sky, had long ago begun to stir, to speak. The white bones of those sleeping in the Cimetière Saint-Michel, in the Cimetière Saint-Vincent, and in the country graveyards of the Haute-Vallée were beginning to awake. A shifting, a murmuring through the cities of the dead, words carried on the wind. War was coming to the south.